KOOP Hornsby Austin. I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio. We're with you every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. On your community radio station in Austin, and we stream on the World Wide Web. We have people listening to us all over the place, and we want to welcome everybody. Thanks for being with us. We want to remind you that you can go and you can, all of our shows are up on archives, downloadable archives, podcasts. You can listen to everything we've ever done. And you can go to koop.org and then go to the schedule and go to Rag Radio, and we have links to all of our shows. If you need to get in touch with us, you can email us at ragradio@koop.org. And I'll tell you, we have some great stuff coming up in the near future, and I'll tell you about that before the show's over. Joe Nick Petoskey has been writing about Texas and Texans for four decades. Former cab driver and staff writer for the Texas Monthly magazine, and one-time reporter at the Austin American-Statesman, he is the author of Willie Nelson, An Epic Life, and has authored and co-authored biographies of Selena and Stevie Ray Vaughan, and collaborated with photographer Lawrence Parent on books about the Texas mountains, the Texas coast, and Big Bend National Park, all published by the University of Texas Press. He also recorded the oral histories. I think this is very cool, and I want to talk about this. The oral histories of B.B. King, Clarence Fountain of the Blind Boys of Alabama, Memphis musician and producer Jim Dickinson, Tejano superstar Little Joe Hernandez, and 15 other subjects for the Voice of Civil Rights Oral History Project. His latest book is Generations on the Land, published by Texas A&M in January of this year, and he is currently working on a cultural history of the Dallas Cowboys, which I want to talk about, because there's a lot of culture and a lot of history involved in that. I'd also mention that he's written for all kinds of folks, including Rolling Stone and the New York Times and what have you, and also was in the music business itself. In fact, I think when I first knew of Joe Nick was when he was working with Joe King Carrasco and writing for Texas Monthly. It seems to me that that occurred simultaneously.
It sure did.
Okay. Also with us, and this is a great honor, Hector Saldana of the Crayolas. Hey, welcome to Rag Radio.
Hi, Thorne.
And he's going to be performing a couple of songs. Matthew Johnson is our engineer today, and we're happy to have you with us. Tracy Schultz is not here today, but we're in good hands. Okay, on the way over here, I take the bus, and there were a bunch of people going to South by Southwest, and I'm sitting on the bus, and I was looking over some notes. If I don't seem prepared, it's because this guy came over and sat down beside me, this guy with long hair down to his shoulders, going downtown to some South by Southwest thing, and he asked me we started chatting, and I mentioned that I was going to do a radio show, and I said, well, I'm interviewing this guy, this writer, Joe Nick Petoskey, and he said, Joe Nick Petoskey, wow, what a hoot, he said, oh man, he said, I love that Stevie Ray Vaughan book, he said, I read it three times.
Oh, that's sweet to hear.
So dude, you're a rock star.
I don't know what I am, I'm just glad to be doing what I'm doing,
okay,
and getting away with it.
And what you do is great, and I mean, I love your writing, and I love the work you've done, and I think it's interesting because you clearly have two passions. Well, I can't actually speak to your passions, but you have at least in your writing both music and the music of Texas and the sort of nature and beauty of Texas.
It's all about a sense of place, and it's spending my life trying to figure out who are these people, us, and why are we the way we are, and why is this so different from everywhere else? And I love finding what I find commonality. And there's one way, the easiest way to probably get into cultures, at least in a place like Texas, is through the food. And music has been one pathway, and it's been a pathway that I've explored most of my adult life. And lately, the Dallas Cowboys book, it's kind of about how sports and influences culture or injects itself into defining who we are. And I still can't figure out Texas and Texans other than I'm here and I'm digging it. And that's the story of my life.
Yeah, in Texas, one can study and talk about and think about and research Texas. There's just so much to do and so much about it. Texas is such a giant not just place, but concept. And very few people have really been able to communicate its variety and sense of place, as you're talking about, that well. Although we've had some great writers in Texas, and a lot of people in other parts of the country don't realize how many great writers that we've that have come out of Texas.
That's because it's hard to be a writer in Texas. It's hard to do a lot of creative things, but it's less and less so. And I think creativity has always been encouraged in a place like Austin. I mean, this goes. I love the factoid that Richard Szilagyi dug up for Eddie Wilson doing some research that in 1848 in Austin there were more printing presses than there were churches, and this was an exception that continues. I mean, Thorne, I'm not kidding. I remember in the late 60s coming down to Austin from Fort Worth for a high school football game, and we did a lot more than just watch the game on that trip. And I remember one thing was when a couple friends went down to the Vulcan Gas Company, and they brought back copies of The Rag, and we saw what this was, and it's like, this is the history of Austin, that it remains a free space, an independent place, and it's as much a part of Texas as any redneck part of the state is, and it defines us even more, because this isn't just among Texans anymore. This conversation, the whole world is here. This week,
for those of you,
cool people in the world are coming here because they think Austin's cool.
And we're going to talk about Austin this week in South by Southwest too. Obviously, we're going to talk about that and the music and the culture. For those of you who don't know, for those of you who are tuning in from say Neptune, The Rag is our history, our genesis. The Rag was a '60s underground newspaper published in Austin, and which I was the original editor of. And The Rag blog and Rag radio are kind of a digital age rebirth of those times.
It really fostered whatever the Austin Chronicle and all these alternative papers and now online sites, all this thing that's considered alternative culture goes back to what a very small group of free thinkers were doing in Austin at the time. I think about how many people from here supplied the raw talent in San Francisco, which begat a whole music movement, from Chet Helms to Janis and Travis Rivers and Rocky and Sir Doug. I mean, this idea that you had to go there to really do your thinking and creativity, you don't have to do that anymore. In fact, if anything, it's kind of scary how many people are coming here.
Yeah, we went out to California then, and now California's coming here, and so we've been thinking about putting up put up signs on the highways saying, sorry, we're full.
Well, and this is part of my cultural bias growing up in North Texas. If we're going to build up a wall on a river, it ought to be on the Red River to keep the Okies out rather than down south, because I like the influences that we're getting coming from there. Yeah. I mean, this is as much as some people deny it, it's our culture.
Yeah.
Always has been.
Okay, South by Southwest is happening right now in Austin, and South by Southwest is a music interactive and film conference festival event that's the largest of its kind anywhere in the world, and it's the largest music industry gathering anywhere in the world. And it keeps getting bigger and bigger. It started out, I think the first one had like 700 people, and they were very happy to have 700 people register. It was a sign that it was really going to take off, and it's grown and it's grown and it's grown. I think there's a movie that was premiered here called movie directed by Alan Berg called Outside Industry, The Story of South by Southwest. And this movie was written about it, said Austin in the 80s had one of the cheapest costs of living of any city in the U.S. and was one of the most vibrant music scenes. Four guys living on next to nothing created a music event in the hopes of giving outsiders a way to connect with music industry insiders. Their creation grew to be the biggest music industry event in the world. So while the South by Southwest name retains some of its indie cred in less aware circles, it has been an industry behemoth for quite some time. The turning point came in the mid-90s when the founders finally allowed labels and companies to sponsor showcases and control who gets invited. The cash fire hose was turned on, and with it came a frequent and sustained sellout backlash that is still heated today. What do you think about what South by Southwest has become? Is it just evolving into something else? Is it too big? Has it lost its...
It's something else, and it's certainly big. I was trolling day parties on Wednesday, and I read in the paper Thursday, gosh, I was two blocks from where Jack White did his pop-up concert, pulling his van over and playing. And it's that kind of abundance. It's an embarrassment of riches. And it's also anything that corporate America wants to sell to the youth of America, they've got a presence there. But, you know, so much of it, like Fader Fort, we were talking about just a few minutes ago with some friends, that's a whole outside event. That South by Southwest has nothing to do with that. And it's become this thing that I was telling my wife, I said, I guess
it's like one of those horror movies.
You lived in Fort Lauderdale in the 60s, back when spring break first started happening. And those people probably thought it was a horrible thing, but it eventually moved away. And I don't know how much it can sustain long term on this level, but I think it's all great. I mean, I like showing it off as long as they come back here in August to see how it really is, if they're thinking about moving here.
When I said that about a horror movie, I just meant the fact that it's the creature that kind of grows on its own.
It is not planned, and to me the amazing thing is I'm in the movie talking a lot because I know the guys.
Because you talk a lot.
I could have had a seat at the table mm-hmm. when they started talking about this, and I was off on other things, but I think I understand that to me the greatest factor is knowing the four guys that started it. Three of the four are still involved in running it.
That is pretty amazing.
And by now, they could have retired, they could have sold their share, they could have done all these things, and yet it's pretty hands-on. And at the base of it, I don't know how about all of it weighs in, but at the base of it, there's some pretty good heart because they still remember where they came from, I think.
Okay, we're talking with Joe Nick Potosky. I'm Thorn Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio. Also with us, Hector Saldana, came in from San Antonio.
San Antonio, that's
San
right.
San Antonio. So welcome to Austin. I'm sure it's not your first trip. You're going to play something for us, right?
Sure, I'll play you a song. This is off our new album called Tipsy Topsy Turvy. The song's called Genuine, and I like this song. It's a little bit... maybe a little more bluesy than the Crayolas usually do, but it name checks a real good friend of Joe Nick's, a guy named Estevan Jordan, who just passed away this summer. And it's always good just to think about him. It's not really about him, but I was kind of humming. His name just kind of popped up in the middle of it. So it's called Genuine. Yeah, I know this city. Yeah, I know these streets. I can even tell you where Estevan Jordan packs his heat. I ain't no Cantinflas, baby. I ain't no Matador. I'm a genuine Mexified San Antonio rock and roll star. Yeah, the wind do blow round the Bishop's Gate, out on Highway 16 with your bootleg tapes. I ain't no Cantinflas, baby. I ain't no Matador. I'm a genuine Mexified San Antonio rock and roll star. When the fruit goes bad, I don't decide. When the truth gets bad, all you best drive slow. What the policeman says, just say, I don't know. I know Cantinflas, baby. I know Matador. I'm a genuine Mexified San Antonio rock and roll star. When the fruit goes bad, I don't be sad. When the truth goes bad, stop worrying. Yeah, I know these cities. I know these streets. I can even tell you donde Estevan Jordan packs his heat.
ain't no Captain Plus Baby. I ain't no Matador. I'm a genuine Mexified San Antonio rock and roll star.
Ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors,
Hector Saldana, a genuine Mexified San Antonio rock and roll star of the Crayolas. And are you guys playing? Is there someplace that people can go hear you?
Yeah, we're part of South by Southwest. We've been lucky. This is our fourth in a row invited guests. So we're playing a showcase. You can find us somewhere out there in the world, I should say. On Saturday night, we'll be playing. And then we're doing a thing with Alejandro Escovedo in the afternoon as well. So I would invite people to find us at Maria's Taco Express in the afternoon and at Ten Oak on Saturday.
My favorite hangout. Very, very cool. Okay, we're going to take a break in just a minute, but I did want to tell my guest is Joanette Petoskey, who's a writer, author, Texas interpreter to the world. And we're talking right now about South by Southwest, but we're going to talk about a bunch of other stuff, including the Dallas Cowboys and Big Ben.
Let's do it.
So
come on.
I did want to tell you that a mutual writer friend of ours, who also writes about nature, who writes about travel and adventure, Tom Miller, in Tucson, Arizona, saw that you were going to be on the show, and he's listening. Yeah,
the author of Panama Hat and the first modern explorer, literary explorer in Cuba, I think, after during Castro's reign.
And we did a show with Tom, and you can find that online.
Hi, Tom.
He said that he sent his warmest regards, and he said that you're one of the few survivors of the rock writing scare that swept through Austin and the rest of the country through the 70s. He said, there are precious few of us left. He said, do you remember that little cutie we met backstage at the Armadillo?
Oh, I'm not going there on that.
Okay.
If I did, I've forgotten conveniently.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We've got some announcements. We'll be right back with Joanette Petoskey, and we're also going to be hearing again from Hector Saldana of the Crayolas. Hector Saldana, what are we listening to there?
That was Gonna Walk Downtown off the new album Tipsy Topsy Turvy that we're debuting at South by Southwest. The Crayolas are doing that.
Very cool. And by the way, the Crayolas is spelled K-R-A-Y-O-L-A-S. And, there was a band in 60s Houston called the Red Crayolas, a psychedelic band.
Red Crayola.
Red Crayola.
That's right.
I guess Red Crayola. I'm not sure.
Yes. Singular, yes.
Singular, yes. So, okay, Joanette Petoskey is my guest, and Hector Saldana. In today's Austin American Statesman, there's always big free events during South By at Auditorium Shores, which is down on the edge of Lady Bird Lake. And when we say large, we say big. I mean, lots and lots of people come. I don't know how many people, but double-digit thousands probably. And the show last night, they had some problems. There were people. There were apparently it was overflowing crowd. They broke down some barricades. There was a big traffic snarl, and some people are saying, "Oh, this is too big. This is, you know, whatever." And also John Kelso, who's a sort of a humor writer for the Austin American Statesman, wrote today about the caste system of South by Southwest and the fact that there's, you know, you have, if you have a platinum badge, you get to go ahead of everybody else. And he was making a, you know, he was kind of having some fun, but he did, there was a little bit of seriousness to what he was saying, that it's, you know, what do you think about, again, Jonick, you think it's great and it's all, it, there's just so much happening and there's something for everybody, which is true. You don't have to go to official events. There's always so much music. I mean, you go to, you go around Austin right now, and I don't know how many bands this year, 2,000 or something.
I think I lost.
That's the official number, and then unofficially, probably around 3,500, I'd guess. Yeah. It's this is the first year, you know, where technology, interactive registrants, outnumbers the musicians.
Yeah, and they almost closed that. They didn't close music, I think, this year.
By close, you mean close the registration?
Yeah, and say TikTok, the game's locked. And, yeah, you know, this has been a worry, but it's...
Does it
it's,
still have room to grow?
I don't know.
Because it's not going to stop here.
Yeah, well, they want to try to do more satellite areas. They'd I was joking about... So I guess this is going to be the event that pushes the Convention Bureau to push for doubling in capacity. Because they could handle a doubling in capacity and keep it more central if that was the idea. But no one's building expanding convention centers right now. And I don't know that, you know, it, to me, these are problems of success, that the capacity that evidently for Auditorium Shores is 20,000. And the Strokes hit that last night. So I thought, well, good booking, you know, at least not 6,000 for some lame band or you know, someone from the...
Open the doors and you'd have 6,000. So,
yeah, so it all evens out in that respect. And I mean, look, it's all relative. And it's what do you want to be? What are you coming here for? You come for music. You're coming for food. You're coming to get laid. You're coming to get a deal. You're coming for fun. Or is this fantasy camp for your band? I met a guy from Perth, Australia, who's the head of the Western Australia Music Association, WA. And he said there's 50 bands from Perth that apply to come here every year. And this year, 5-1 got in. And, you know, the penalty is each band member, it cost about $2,000 to $3,000 just to get them here. And I said, well, who pays that? He said, well, sometimes the label. But look, you know, we talk about the music industry. There's no music industry. Yeah. It's gone.
Oh, well, okay.
So, yeah. But there's plenty of music being made. For all the right reasons, there's just very few people have figured out a way to monetize all this. And that's where they jump into South by Southwest organizers, because they make some. But I was getting the explanation earlier today about the history of Fader's Fort and what that is and what it represents and how much the reason that's there and is its own little city is because of all the publicity and goodwill they're going to get for the rest of the year. So that's what this is about.
You mentioned that there's no music industry because obviously the media have changed so dramatically and because of the digital era and because all the traditional, you know, now you can get music in different ways. The delivery systems have
changed. Free downloads.
The delivery systems have changed so dramatically. Is there going to be, will an industry build back up around new models?
I think everybody's trying to figure that out. And I don't know who has other than Steve Jobs with iTunes.
Yeah.
No, seriously. And I think, you know, there's a whole paradigm shift. It's newspapers, it's magazines, it's all this, even the hip old media, it's record stores trying to reinvent themselves. Waterloo has a hard time. Waterloo's packed this week. John Coons wants it packed year-round instead. And, you know, he's hanging in there when many other stores have failed. But independents still have a place. Yeah. There's always going to be a place for a bookstore. But this is changing how we do business and how we react and how we communicate now, how we get together.
Okay,
so,
you.
I don't know.
Jonick Potosky, you wrote an article that we just ran in the Rag Blog this week.
And thank you for doing that, because Jesse Sublett saw it and messaged me on Facebook to say that was a real good read. And Jesse lives right down the street from South Congress.
Jesse Sublett will be my guest on Rag Radio and on April 8th.
Cool.
So how about that? Jesse Sublett, for those of you who don't know, is an incredibly accomplished musician, writer, novelist, jack of a number of creative trades. Anyway, this article that originally was written for Preservation, the magazine of the National Trust for Preservation, just a wonderful piece about South Austin, about South Congress, SoCo, which it's called in the vernacular, although I don't know people who call it that, which has developed in this very interesting and very organic way, and it's pretty remarkable. And somebody wrote a comment to that article saying basically, oh, this is another sign of how Austin is losing all of its, it seems exactly losing all of its sense of history and all of its which is exactly the opposite to me. This is an example of something positive that's being retained. But on the other hand, and people can find that article by going to the ragblog.blogspot.com. And we're not going to talk about this a lot. We talk about it. We've talked about it on this show, and it gets to be, everybody beats the dead horse. But the whole question of Austin, just as South by Southwest, that Austin is there's little resemblance to what we knew in the 60s and 70s here, and that's inevitable.
I mean, I think that's passage of time, and that's your memory keepers, and who's still. Still here. I loved it doing the panel with Roland Swenson and Lewis Black at the Austin History Center. We started doing that. Yeah, wasn't it better back in the 70s? And then someone mentioned the 60s.
Well, it was better in the 50s.
Now, when they said the 60s, I heard you, Thorne, go, yay! And then we got back to the 50s and then the 30s. And, man, wasn't it cool in the 30s when no one was here and no one was messing it up and it was a real paradise?
Yeah.
But it... part of it is relative. Part of it I worry about, it's the exponential growth, how much bigger it is and how smaller a core there was that of all things that are really cool. And it's funny how it echoes or resonates. I mean, a lot of these, they're not my people. But
what I hear is that everybody's going to Wimberley now.
Hey, I'm part of the problem, though. I thought we were just going to get ahead of the sprawl. In 93, the first thing, we were living in Bubba Land. And it was the first time I didn't live downtown in 20 years. And I hated it. I mean, Bubba Land was south of Ben White, east of Man Shack. And it actually was a pretty cool neighborhood. But I lived on Disenchanted Lane, I called it. And in 93, when the last bust really got done with here, real estate-wise, we thought we were going to move to Zilker Park and next to Barton Springs. Because I was hooked. And, man, prices were already way out of our range. And someone said, Travis. First, we looked at Barton Hills. We couldn't afford that. And then someone said, oh, Travis Country. I thought, Travis Country. Oh, God. And then it was like, get beyond all this. And the orders, I asked my wife if she'd find a place that was near a swimming hole. And she found that place. And we're out on the far side, the San Antonio side of Wimberley, where the growth is getting really ugly now.
And that's why we're all coming to see you. So we're
but I've got that swimming hole, and instead of Barton Springs, I'm the troll of Slime Bridge. And I'll tell you when you're trespassing, and I'll pick up your trash for you and throw it back in your car.
Okay, you've written a lot about, Mr. Troll, sir, about the... nature, the culture, the about Big Bend, about other stuff. At the same time, you've also written about music, and it's part of our heritage.
Well, it's part of Austin, and my wife coaxed me into Barton Springs back in the 70s, and that was kind of it, figuring out Springs and realizing that it's not just Austin, but it's all this area called the Hill Country and how unique it was, how five climatic zones converge here, and why it's treed and hillied instead of flat and prairie or dry and desiccated. And that was really kind of it. It's about learning about where you are and your sense of place. And Bud Schrake beat me to it in the mid-60s. He wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated that just nailed it. And then he moved here because he could live anywhere in the world. And he left New York and moved to Austin. He was... the greatest literary light in my lifetime.
Yeah, wonderful. Started out as a sports writer, I believe, didn't he? Just like Gary Cartwright.
Yeah, Fort Worth Press. Yeah, he went to Pascal, which was, I went to Arlington Heights. And there's something about Fort Worth that's soulful like San Antonio that I don't think other places in Texas have this kind of sense of soul. And I'll say that even about Austin or Houston, but San Antonio and Fort Worth are just places that they're great to be from, whether you're in them or not.
Right. Okay, your latest book is Generations on the Land.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Oh, I took some money from the Sand County Foundation, and they said, go profile these 9 families that had been lived on the land for generations that had won stewardship awards. So I spent time with these 9 families over the western United States, a logging family that does sustainable logging in Wisconsin, a wine grape growing family of 2 twins and their offspring, who not only do sustainable wine grape growing, but they did a big settlement with the Federal Wildlife Agency, Fish and Wildlife, did the first settlement between landowners and the government about, you know, not killing too many endangered species and doing better restoring habitat. So everywhere were wise people. I did 2 families in Texas, father and son that really got into prescribed burning to restore prairie land and ranch land and make it productive. And they're like firebugs, but they do great work. And I've asked them if they'd do my land. And, you know, I think my neighbors might take umbrage. But then another family that was restoring native prairie up south of Dallas-Fort Worth for the Tarrant County Water District, they were getting credits for keeping their land clean. So the creek water that goes into Richland Creek Reservoir, which Tarrant County takes, is cleaner. So yeah, they're saving them money.
Well, it's interesting. If you're going to go out and visit with people and learn about what they're doing like that, it's probably much more interesting than, say, what Dick Revis did with day labor camps.
It's a different thing. And look, this was not, I wasn't challenging much, but I got to go on some of the most beautiful land in the western United States and hang out with people. And one thing I learned is all these families that have been in on more than a few generations, I mean, they're determined to stay on the land. And it's really hard now because of taxes and fragmentation and the allure of cities. But so, you know, their story deserves to be told. And the main thing is, how did you learn how to do this over 3 generations and not ruin it, but make it better?
Yeah.
And so I look for people like that. They're heroes of mine.
Okay, Joe Nick Potoski also with us, Hector Saldana of the Crayolas. Are you going to perform something else for us, sir?
Yeah, I'll do the acoustic version of the title track of our new album. It's called Tipsy Topsy Turvy. It's the song kind of is born out of I have kind of chronic insomnia, and one night I was up just watching TV. I was watching Little Caesar, the 1931 film with Edward G.
Robinson.
Yeah, and you know, playing the gangster. And I cut about halfway through, and I just got intrigued by it. But he gets killed behind a billboard sign called Tipsy Topsy Turvy. So I turned him into a woman and just made up a little story about it. It's not a linear story, but and it's kind of hard to do a rock and roll song on an acoustic guitar. It has a little riff that goes. I'll just kind of do it Chuck Berry style, all right? Tipsy, topsy-turvy, hitchhiking on her back. Tipsy, topsy-turvy, she ain't ever coming back. Tipsy, topsy-turvy, your lips are turning blue. Tipsy, topsy-turvy, sprawled on the avenue. Tipsy, topsy turvy, lives a life of misery. Tipsy, topsy turvy, baby, better you than me. Tipsy, topsy turvy, are you playing your half-ass games? Tipsy, topsy, turvy, I never knew your name. She got something stuck in your craw. Well, you better spit it out before your poison is all. Tipsy, topsy, turvy, Little Caesar's Tommy gun. Tipsy, topsy, turvy, the devil got you on the run. Tipsy, topsy, turvy,
behind the billboard sign. Tipsy Topsy Turvy made a living out of dying.
Saldana with a slight assist from Chuck Berry. Thank you.
But a whole lot of San Antonio all over.
A whole lot of San Antonio. Tomorrow, Maria's Tacos, Taco Express on South Lamar at 3.
That's going to be fun. Alejandro's party.
Alejandro. Okay. Joe Potoski, we're going to take a break in just a minute. Tell me a little bit about the Dallas Cowboy Project.
Well, it's you grow up in Fort Worth, and your entire life you always wonder, what is this place, Dallas? Because no matter what you do or how well you do it, there's always going to be this thing, Dallas. Dallas got it bigger and better. And why? And this has really been an eternal question, and I'm thankful that Little Brown and Company is paying me money to try to figure it out.
Anyone who's spent any time in Fort Worth really wonders why it's Dallas.
Well, you know, that's the old joke. The best thing about Dallas is there's a really great city 30 miles west. But part of it's that, but it's also, it's what defines us, our culture. And this thing called football, I'm double dipping, because at the same time, in August, I have an exhibit that I've curated for the Bob Bullock Texas History Museum here in Austin, just about four blocks north of the Capitol. And the exhibit is Texas High School Football, More Than the Game. So it's examining the culture of Friday Night Lights. So it's about football players and coaches, but it's also about bands and cheerleaders and mascots and moms, and kind of exploring why we do it better.
Why do we do it better, and why are we so into it here?
Well, you know, the best I can say is there's a coach down in Somerset, south of San Antonio, who's coached all around Texas. He's had two very successful sons. A guy named Sonny Detmer told me, visited him at Somerset. He said, well, you know, we're just kind of a rough people. And football's a rough sport. And I think there's something that speaks to our core about that roughness and frontier. We've taken that, and it really has become this ultimate game that is it's a way of life and it's a culture. So I'm doing this one end, and that's kind of one look at the story. And simultaneously, I'm trying to finish this book manuscript, which is about how professional football came into Texas. And excuse the Oilers and the Texans, professional football is all about Dallas, because you had all this rare chemistry. You had two sons of two of the richest men on earth. They were oil barons, Lamar Hunt and Clint Murchison Jr. And coming along in the late 50s, they both wanted to own football teams. And so Lamar started a whole league called the American Football League, and the Dallas Texans, who were really my favorite early on. And then there were the Dallas Cowboys for 3 years. And even after that, the Texans won the AFL championship at Jefferson Stadium in Houston. And I believe it was against the Oilers. Yeah. It was the first one to go into triple overtime, and Abner Haynes elected on the final flip to kick into the wind, and they still won. But for all that, the Cowboys won, and it's basically exploring the brain trust and the conditions of the city that define it. So my point is, the most valuable franchise in American sport, which is a huge business and entertainment, couldn't have happened anywhere else but Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, and, but they didn't have Bum Phillips.
Well, I always liked Bum, because yeah, we're Texas's team. I don't care about America's team. Next time we're going to kick the door down, and he didn't.
Yeah.
And I was still rooting for Wade, but we've got Bum and Wade in the Bullock Museum exhibit. He is a saint down there in Port Neches Groves in Nederland.
Okay, Joe Nick Potoski also joining us, Hector Saldana of the Crayolas. We'll be right back.
The working people of the world, though they come out. Yes, I am. WORK.
Okay, I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio. Hector Saldana, we were listening to. Is that also off of your new
That's on the Crayola's new Tipsy Topsy Turvy album. That's called The Working People. The song kind of came out of a day when I was trying to teach myself the bass guitar. I kind of gave up, but I wrote that song.
Okay, Hector Saldana is with us, and Joe Nick Potoski, who's a writer and who's been writing about interpreting Texas for Texans and for the rest of the world for a long time, and is, I think, one of the more important cultural critics out there today. And we're thrilled to have you on Rag Radio.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
You know, Thorne, may I interject? I mean, one of the things I love about Nick is he's immersed in the scene, but yet approaches the subject with sort of that outside looking in distance, you know, to really look at something, you know, to give it some context. You know, he's written a lot about San Antonio stuff, and a lot of times he writes about things, I think, that people don't notice. You know, they're in the middle of creating something. They themselves might not notice, and he sort of helps to define or put it into some sort of context.
I appreciate you using that term context, because that is a key, that it's not what you see, but, you know, what's the story? How did all this in the background, how did all this inform it and get there? And that's the real skill. And to me, that's my strength with the Cowboys. I'm not a sports writer. I followed it, and it scares me how much I know and how much I remember. But it's more like, what is this thing? I'm an armchair anthropologist. I'm just trying to figure it all out until I can't figure it out anymore. And it's a game in a way to me. It's fun that we're great. I mean, as crazy as it all is, and as much as sometimes, you know, maybe I should devote my life and try to be a Molly Ivins or something like that, I'm just more goofing on it, what a remarkable place and what a remarkable people we are.
Okay, speaking about anthropology, sociology, musicology, Texana, Patsy Cline, Farron Young, and Ray Price turned his songs into standards. Miles Davis named one of his Jack Johnson-era jams after him. He bailed Dennis Hopper out of jail after one of the last movie auteur's notorious mid-70s acid benders. Your mom may have sung along with Julio Iglesias and him, and so on and so on. This was from an interview. This was not Joe Nick's words, but this was the interviewer's summation in an interview that Joe Nick did in 2007. Joe Nick said, and I quote, "The first time I took Willie seriously was seeing him play on a flatbed trailer in the body shop of McMorris Ford. A typical Wood country Street. Band until the middle of Bloody Mary morning when the whole ensemble took off on a spacey jam."
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, that's, I sincerely believe that when the day comes that Willie's no longer with us, we're finally going to realize that, talk about giants walking among us. He's heroic to me in what he's done, what he continues to do. And he's so creative, and he's always thinking.
We're talking about Willie Nelson, by the way, for anybody out there again. Who
and I just
know.
Got word that he's there may be a project involving the recent stories, the saga of Billy Joe Shaver, which is larger than life, that he may be involved in. Willie's just cool. He's like a woman told me from behind the counter at a smoking paraphernalia shop that won't be mentioned by name. She told me, "Oh yeah, he's bad A," and she was like, she wasn't over 25. So yeah, I mean, all we could aspire towards is good luck. I'm trying to be, you know, about to turn 78, and you're as cool as you are.
You know, and it's amazing to be somebody who openly smokes dope daily and who doesn't pay his income tax and yet is cherished by everyone, maybe partly because of that.
Well, he's an honest cat.
He's totally honest.
There's not many people in his business in particular, or just in music and entertainment, that he's like no one else. I mean, there's no one who I enjoy spending time with on his touring bus as much as Willie.
Turk Pipkin says he's a hell of a chess player, too.
You know, all I know is he leaves me not in the condition to play chess.
I see.
And if you're going to go hang, He's who you want to hang with.
Any special tales from your time and
with no him about or, just having
not
no,
that you can tell.
No, just make me break out in a sweat trying to go over the East Bay Bridge after visiting with him and being in a car. And I had no business being in the car. That's all I can say.
I would recommend getting Joe Nick's book, Willie Nelson, An Epic Life, because there's some moments in there that I thought were really great. Because we all have some idea of Willie Nelson. We love him, and you know, you have some stories. But that scene when you're talking, there's a scene in there when he's making that change from the Nashville thing into the Texas sound, and when I can't remember what song they were recording, but when he didn't like the produced sound and he went into the studio room and just played it on the guitar, and that was the take, and it gave me chills, because it was just like that was the moment, like the artist knows what it is, you know, he doesn't want to be defined anymore, he wants to define it.
He's done so much for the whole creative spark, that whatever it is in Austin, that by coming here and doing what he did, it's to me what you see this week is a result of all that, and it's almost like you can trace it back, and he is the root, and yet new theater, he's more happening than ever, and God bless Willie. That's all I can say.
You've also written books about Selena and Stevie Ray Vaughan,
who, yes,
along with Willie, are three of the most seminal figures in Texas music. Who else do you think fits into that category?
I don't know, because I kind of run song? Out that they're
a triad. Of subjects.
Well, yeah. That's one reason why I went over to the Cowboys. It's still all entertainment and culture. But no, I mean, I've thought about Doug. Just I know there's been a really fine biography written by Jan Reed, yeah, with Sean Somm.
Jan was my guest too.
I haven't read it yet, though. I mean, I'm trying to get a book finished. Yeah. Someday I'll read it, but yeah. I think I might have one in me. The things I'm thinking about is actually, honestly, is setting stories in Houston and in San Antonio would be the other two. And if I could ever do them, then maybe Fort Worth and I'm done. But the idea is, I mean, Houston in the early 60s was Nashville and Memphis at the same time. I mean, it was popping. And could have been both, but my theory is it was overwhelmed by oil money and wildcatters. If you're going to gamble, that's the stuff you should be gambling on, not music. And in San Antonio, it's still what I really love about Hector's music is it is tied into this legacy that was not much explored or celebrated. And even in its midst in San Antonio, is not respected. But, you know, it goes back to Doug and Sir Doug. It goes back to Rudy and the Reno Bops. And it goes back to Freddie Fender playing drive-ins in San Antonio, and Joe Anthony and Ricky Ware being these disc jockeys that were pretty hip for their time. And that time's kind of passed, but there's this whole resurgence, the Criollas, Piñata Protest, oh, yeah, which are the Pogues and the Ramones of conjunto music, Girl in a Coma, which are the hottest girl band in yeah, the world right fantastic. Now, and still sound like San Antonio, and then Hacienda, who are these guys that just got three brothers and a cousin that got together in a garage, and they're knocking out these harmonies that are kind of like Beach Boys or Beatles or Fleet Foxes, and getting working with the Black Keys. So there's something going on still in San Antonio. It's when you can create and your sense of place rubs off, man, that's when you hit the sweet spot. And that's, I'm still chasing that.
What was the important stuff that was, I'm interested. Oh, and San Antonio, it's remarkable.
No two cities are 80 miles apart and so culturally diametrically opposed. Yeah. And yet, yeah, I mean, to be able to work both of them is magic.
With music, and Joe Nick and I have talked about this a lot. I mean, with the Chicanos and the Tex-Mex sound, especially there in San Antonio, it's amazing how many of these musicians that are just great. And I'm talking about, you know, like Luis Bustos and Sauce Gonzalez, all these, anyone you talk to, how much they were into black music and into R&B and soul and doo-wop. And that's that combo that sort of emerged out of the west side of San Antonio and out of the south side. You know, you talk to Sonny Ozuna and they were really out of the south side. But it was these young Mexican-American teenagers that didn't want to be hemmed in by their parents' music necessarily. They loved it, but they were as turned on by Dick Clark, and also by the music that would come in from New Orleans and the Chitlin circuit. We had a club called the Eastwood Country Club that had people like James Brown and Little Richard and
Gatemouth
James and people, and they'd go. And Doug Somm was there in the mix. You know, it was all these and Augie Myers, and you had these kids that were just they just tapped into something. A lot of times they don't even know what was going on.
Yeah, but it really is a sound, and I like it that they've mentioned. I saw some review of the Crayolas. They actually are the link because Augie Myers has recorded with them, and they were calling it one of the few bands of unironic organ. And and I'm just thinking, well, Augie defines unironic. He had to loan his Vox organ to the Dave Clark Five when they came over to the States on the first trip. And to be that connected, I mean, your sound is your sound, but it still is. I can hear a lot of the same creative burst that I would hear in classic Sir Douglas Quintet. Well,
it's interesting because Sir Douglas Quintet, of course, was one of the few Texas British invasion bands.
And he's the reason I came to Austin. Because when he was holding court in Soap Creek, I remember reading Chet
Flick. For those who don't know, they called themselves Sir Douglas Quintet so that people would play off the fame of the
British invasion. Then they spoke on Hullabaloo and it ruined everything. I came here because I read this story. I was homesick anyhow, but I was up in Minneapolis. And there's Chet Flippo's story about Soap Creek Saloon on a night with Doug. And Doug lives just right down the footpath from Soap Creek. And, man, I came here. And it was everything that Chet said, and it was just like being a kid in a candy shop, and it was there in the Armadillo and the Split Rail and getting to know people.
I mean, when you're hanging out with people like Flaco Jimenez, and like for example that song "The Working People" that's on the new album, we have a Mexican. A Spanish version of it called "El Gatito y la Avispa." It's a little story about a kind of these borracho. Cat and a bee that are friends, and Flaco's on it, plays accordion, and Max Baca plays some bajo sexto. It's a lot of fun. I mean, you can't be in San Antonio, and I mean these cats are just around, and they're the nicest guys, and they're crazy. I mean, they've got the, you know, and they're geniuses. I think.
And Doug used to bring them up. I mean, that was to meet Rocky and Richard Elizondo, and Louis Bustos, Charlie McBurney, some really great players. And there was all Doug was the guy that brought this mixing of San Antonio and Austin.
I was going to say that Doug Somm was the synthesizer in lots of ways, and I think that the people you have written biographies on are all acknowledged greats by people all over the world. Doug Somm is way underrecognized.
Yeah, there's always the petitions to get him in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I don't know how you do it, but you know you mentioned all those people, and I really think you know Selena. Stevie and Willie all tell these great stories that kind of crisscross. But when I think of the all-around best individual, no one like Doug because he could hang with the Chicanos from El West Side. He was Doug Saldana. He could play that lap steel and fiddle better than any hillbillies. I mean, he had the respect of Link Davis and all the Cajuns. And he was a rock and roller. I mean, it was one thing. And he could play blues. Like T-Bone Walker and people that you'd never heard. He was the only guy that really was kind of outside, but eventually he got together with Clifford Antone. I mean, he taught Jimmy and Stevie as much as anyone just because he had been there.
Okay, we're just about out of time. This has been pretty remarkable. One thing I would mention, by the way, is we're going to the Austin Music Awards tomorrow. Right, and Rocky Erickson is playing for one thing, and there's somebody else we didn't talk about.
The Bubble Puppy.
And
you're
the Bubble
playing.
Puppy.
And they've been working hard and practicing, so you better show up.
Bubble Puppy from 60s Houston. Psychedelic rock.
We opened for them one time, man.
Did you?
Hot Smoke and Sassafras.
Hot, yes.
Got to number 20 nationally.
Okay. Joe Nick Potoski and Hector Saldana. I was going to have you sing another one, but we need another hour.
I'm sorry.
No.
No, thank you for that.
We were going so strong here. I want to tell people I'm Thorn Dryer. This is Rag Radio. Want to let you know what we have coming up in the next couple of weeks. Next Friday, author and gay studies pioneer Martin Duberman, who just wrote an incredible book, and joining him, the legendary pacifist anti-war activist and openly gay from early on, from the 70s, David McReynolds, who ran actually for president as a socialist candidate. On April 1st, we have an April Fool's special with Paul Krasner, his third time on Rag Radio, and Jesse Sublett will be here on April 8th. So lots of cool stuff coming up. We want to thank you again, Joe, Nick, and Hector, for being with us. And it's been a lot of fun. And we want to thank everybody out there and remind you that you can listen to this show soon and to everything else we do by going to coop.org and looking up Rag Radio. And we have links to all of our shows.
Cool.
Cool.
Cool. Thank you.
Very cool. Rag Radio, KOOP, Hornsby, Austin.